Hi, I'm Josh Reschingen for Femi OK. On today's show, Russia's war on Ukraine has killed thousands of people and close to 3 million people have left the country. And as Russian forces move further into the country, they're also destroying large parts of Ukraine's cultural heritage, a tactic all too common to war. Take a look.
Right now, what we're most concerned about is the damage or the potential damage to monuments, sites, museums, and their collections. We're also concerned about possible looting of collections at museums and other sites, and their illicit trafficking. So that's why some of the projects at the Ali Foundation that we're already supporting is to inventory museum collections so that we have a strong record now of what goes where. In terms of need, we know from our partners on the ground, cultural heritage professionals on the ground, that what's needed most are things like packing materials, boxes, fireproof blankets, anti-humidity materials, so that their collections can be safely stowed, packed, and stored.
The fate of these collections are making us extremely nervous. Of course, in this moment, the international community is trying to help. I know that packing materials, crating, and other things are sent to Ukraine by international museums. But I am afraid that in this situation, it is too little and too late.
Last week, the UN Cultural Agency released a statement saying it is, quote, gravely concerned about the destruction of Ukrainian art and history. UNESCO said, quote, we must safeguard the cultural heritage in Ukraine as a testimony of the past, but also as a catalyst for peace and cohesion for the future, which the international community has a duty to protect and preserve. Today, we'll take a look at the efforts being made to protect Ukrainian cultural heritage threatened by this Russian attack. To do so, I'm joined from Los Angeles by Irina Valeskova. She's the Cultural Diplomacy Program Director at the Ukrainian Art Center. And from Lviv, Eugene Berzhnitsky is the founder of Kyiv Art Week and expert advisor to the Ukrainian Ministry of Culture. Victoria Pidust is a Ukrainian photographer, and she's with Volo Bevza, a Ukrainian artist. Thank you all for being here today. And hey, there's one more guest at this table for discussion, and it's you on YouTube. If you're watching this right now, live on YouTube, see that box there? We've got a live producer waiting to get your comments to me so I can get them to our guests, and you too can be in the stream. All right, with that, let's talk about art and war. Eugene, let's start with you. You're in the middle today, so I'm going to go first. The Russians, as they approach, they are destroying art museums and cultural heritage locations. And, you know, I've thought about this in terms of history, and I thought, you know, when Rome went to Jerusalem and destroyed the temple, or Napoleon went to Egypt and shot the nose off the Sphinx, or the Taliban with the Buddhist statues in Bamyan, or ISIS when they went across Syria and Iraq and destroyed ruins, or the U.S. military when they went into Baghdad and they didn't protect those cultural locations and museums that got looted. This is common to war. Even Sun Tzu wrote about this in war. He actually advised against it because he said it would turn the population against an army. But is there something different about what Putin is doing here? And I ask this because it seems like Putin's central argument for this invasion is about this kind of identity that he seems to be trying to destroy.
Well, this is a very complicated subject, and that's what is the main controversy lies within this war, that on one side there is a claim that Putin wants to free the heritage of Slavonic, of Russian culture, and to find the source of the culture in Ukrainian territory. But he destroys, his army destroys the landmarks, museums, the art, the heritage of the source. And that's the main controversy, and that's what, like, really bedazzling and, you know, perplexing. Namely, there is a clear signature that this is a genocide rather than the attempt to recreate the the sources of his ideology or his country.
Hey, and, Eugene, someone from YouTube just piped in here, Aaron Simmons, and says, can destroying cultural heritage sites and items lead to adding further crimes to the long list that Russia is potentially looking at even during war? And I also want to bring in, it looks like Hermes maybe, said, if Putin believes Ukrainian nationalism undermines his effort / narrative, would preserving Ukraine's cultural symbols risk increased Russian resistance? So I guess like the heart of the question there is art at the center of this war in some way? I think a lot of people would find that maybe slightly surprising. Irina, I see you're nodding. Let's get Irina to jump in on this one too here.
Thank you, guys. Good to be with you, everyone, and contribute to this show and contribute to understanding of a broader context of this insidious war Russia instigated upon Ukraine. Mm-hmm. It's been a prolonged conflict, which didn't start on February 24th in the middle of the night. It's been an assault for hundreds of years during Tsarist Russia, and then during a brutal, tyrannical communist regime with the Kremlin as a head of the state who attempted to merge the nations together of those 15 Soviet republics who are absolutely different, authentic cultures with their historical paths. Mm. What we've gone through as a nation is a brutal burden which Ukrainians dropped after proclaiming its independence. Mm. But everyone has to understand that Russians always try to encroach upon our cultural identity. Mm. And this military conflict, its monstrosity and atrocity, which you contemplate with horror right now, at its core hinges on the issues of cultural identity. So Russia wages war on multiple levels: armed aggression, information war, and cultural war. And Putin's intent to break Ukraine as a nation is unequivocally clear. So Ukraine survived linguicide. Ukrainian language was banned multiple times. And I myself is a victim of linguicide. I was born in the Soviet Russia when Ukraine was the Republic of the Soviet Union, and it was forbidden to speak our mother tongue. They would put people at shame who express themselves in Ukrainian. Hmm. Luckily, my parents were wise enough to educate me both at home and speak to me Ukrainian publicly, regardless of the fact that it was not popular, it was mostly illegal, and they instilled an idea in my heart that I may not be ashamed of being Ukrainian. We were the only family in the military town where I grew, in Kryvyi Rih, who spoke Ukrainian. And I remember when teachers in the primary school were addressing my mom and dad when they heard them talk to me in Ukrainian, telling, why do you cripple your child linguistically? While my parents had a very great argument to counteract that false idea that...
Hold on a second, Irina.
Yeah.
I want to bring in Volo and Victoria here. Volo, if part of this war is about art, then does that mean that artists are, you know, kind of a part of the struggle or soldier? And as you're thinking about this, I want to bring in your specific experience. Can we go to my screen, guys? I want to show this story. This is off of ArtNet, and it shows you guys making these, what I would call practical sculptures, maybe. And by the way, these photos in this article, which are lovely, are by Victoria. But what they're making here, these sculptures, well, I'll let you tell us. What are these sculptures, Volo?
Those are anti-tank, and those are mostly anti-tank obstacles. But this that we are seeing right now, those are against the army vehicles, they're meant to block the vehicles when they reach Ukrainian territory, when they try to come into the cities.
So yeah. Is this literally art fighting back?
No. It's, I would take a minute to get back to the idea of identity war, and in a minute come back to your question if you okay with it.
Please do.
I believe that I agree that what you said is right. It is an identity war, and it's a war on Ukrainian identity and Ukrainian culture, and the main purpose of the war is also to say that there is no Ukrainian culture, there is no Ukraine, there is no Ukrainian artists. And one of the reasons that we came to Ukraine on the 20th February, because we actually, me and Victoria, we live in Berlin since 6.5 years, and we are working there, and I'm teaching in the university and the Berlin Weissensee School of Art. And the reason we came here was the exhibition opening in Kyiv. And it was supposed to open on the 24th of the February.
In the day of invasion of Russia.
Ironically. But we actually decided to come here to show our... that we are against the fear, we are against this idea of... Ukrainian culture being silenced by Putin's aggression, and now we came to Lviv, and I was helping other artists doing those things you showed,
like art. So it looks like art, but it's not actually.
but it's actually not. Yeah. It's those are anti-tank obstacles, and the ironical thing about it is that those are built. By artists, those are built by engineers, by cooks. I mean, all professions, it's so surreal.
So, Victoria, Victoria, I want to bring you into this. Tell me, if that's not art, like you could picture that in a museum, right? I could also picture it stopping a tank on a road.
Yeah, sure.
But I could also picture that, like, what makes a tank trap art, or what makes art a tank trap? What would be the difference?
Oh, it looks like pieces of Sarah, maybe. It's kind of like in this direction. But you can easily say it's art because they're like really different. Like they're built with the heart. they have different colors and they're so... looks like art.
Art is something that is not, that has no use.
Has not use, but it has use.
It does have use, and not just use now, but use eternally. Here, I want to bring in, this is a quote from a museum director there in the country. Listen to this.
We have to pass all these collections, everything, to other generations, from generation to generation. And that's something eternal, as well as human life has to be eternal. Thus, one person should take care of another person and not kill. At the same time, we are defending our land, we are defending our culture, and protecting eternity is probably worth sacrificing your life.
Did you catch that, Eugene? He said protecting eternity is worth risking your life.
Yes. Actually... That's what I wanted to tell, is that sometimes people diminishing the role of the culture. And in my opinion, the culture is a very precious asset on one side, as people usually justify it, but also it's a very dangerous weapon. And what we face here is in this war, that Russia utilizes its approach, its imperialistic and post-colonial approach, to appropriate the Ukrainian culture and to weave it into its imperial texture. And basically what Ukraine is doing now is it really defends its right for its identity and right to call it's a separate culture with long traditions.
You know, the crazy thing, the sad irony here is that Ukrainians are even protecting Russian art and artists from Russian forces. Here, listen to this.
There are over 25,000 items in our collection. Kharkiv Fine Art Museum's collection is one of the biggest in Ukraine, one of the most valuable. We have Duer's original Dutch graphics, Rupen, Samaratsky, Polonov. It is simply irony of fate that we should be saving Russian artists' paintings by Russian artists from their own nation. This is simply barbarism.
Aaron pipes in and says, this is off YouTube, what kind of consequences should Russia face due to heritage sites being destroyed in Ukraine? Like, how should Russia pay in one way or another? What do you think?
Well...
Arena, I was asking Arena that, but Eugene, if you want to go with that as well. But people on YouTube want to know, like, should Russia pay for this? In some way.
Sure. Sure. Russia is a war criminal, an absolute aggressor, and the world's biggest terrorist. And whatever they committed is a war crime, and they should carry consequences. Because every crime Putin committed always was left without any punishment. It just went like a water of duck's tail. But besides those sanctions, economical sanctions, there also should be a consequence of depriving Russia of being a part of UNESCO. Mm-hmm. And part of those frozen assets should be invested into restoration of Ukrainian art and culture.
And you're technically...
They tried to deny it. Now they've got to pay for it.
You're technically legally correct that this actually is a war crime, and it's mentioned in several sets of international laws, to include those from The Hague. You know, there was a harrowing story about a week ago that was in the L.A. Times, and it was about a museum that was set afire, and it had all these paintings from, I want to definitely show these paintings. Someone help me with Promachenko,
Maria Promachenko.
It was her paintings, and she died in what, 1997. So these can't be replicated, and they are stunningly beautiful. Here, let me show this one on my screen here, if you would. And the real sad irony is the name of this particular painting is "May That Nuclear War Be Cursed," and it just breaks my heart to think it wasn't nuclear war, but conventional, that might have set that ablaze in a museum. You know, there's a really, in that article in the LA Times, it was about this guy, a local guy, kept running in and bringing out paintings. And it's, you know, to risk one's life for that kind of preserving eternity, something to pass down generation to generation. Were you familiar with Promachenko? Can you give us a little bit about who she is in the art history of Ukraine?
Maria Promachenko is genuinely a miracle of Ukrainian folk art. She's a self-taught artist. She never went to any art school. As a woman, which epitomizes the strength of Ukrainian woman, her creativity is so flamboyant, and you can see it in every piece of art she depicted. Her home was very modest. And she would often have visitors from all over the world because she was already so famous that she was so not bragging about it. She was admired by Pablo Picasso, who would linger at the exhibitions of Maria Promachenko. Marc Chagall would take those phantasmagorical creatures she depicted and weave it into his motifs in his art. She made every brush of her cat's fur, and her motifs are very cosmical and fantasy, very flamboyant. which incarnates the flamboyance of Ukrainian culture. You can see in her art our cultural identification code.
Eugene, jump in here. I see Frida Kahlo. I see Chagall. Talk to me about this.
Yes, it's true. She's a legend. And of course, she, I mean, the Maria Primashenko, she's a soul, in a way, of Ukrainian art. But that's only one part. That's a folk art. Well, we call it primitive as well. But we value it a lot. And this is part of the code. And but we also have to consider that, we just saw this small inclusion about that we have to keep and safeguard Russian art from Russian conquerors. But we also have to keep in mind that Ukraine had an extensive story of collecting art since like 19th century. And there were collections in Ukrainian museums when it was still a Russian Empire, which were then stolen and were brought to Russian museums, such as Russian Museum of St. Petersburg and Tretiakovsky Gallery. So part of Ukrainian collections of Ukrainian collectors who were like benefactors of arts in on the edge of 19th and 20th century just were looted and kept in Russian museums. Also, for example, the another bright example is that Russian pavilion on Venice Biennial on in Giardini was built of money which were given by Ukrainian collector of art. And basically, it has nothing to do with Russian Empire, because Russian Empire at that time didn't have even capacity or the way of thinking to invest in art.
Right. And, you know, it's not just art. It's also these incredible UNESCO heritage cultural sites like the Cathedral of St. Sophia. We don't know what Putin's going to do. Here, we have a bit of video about this. Hold on.
Following Russia's invasion of Ukraine, Ukrainian cultural heritage is currently at risk, but also directly under attack very intentionally. We already have proof of both accidental damages, but also very deliberate ones. And this is due to the fact, and I think it is very important to understand this point, that Putin denies the existence of Ukraine as a state, and following he denies the existence of a proper Ukrainian culture and cultural heritage.
It's really impossible to know what Putin's full impact on Ukrainian cultural heritage will be. What we do know is since his annexation of Crimea in 2014, 1 million objects of archaeological importance have already been sent back to Moscow. Now, these objects in some way relate to Russian history or imperialism. During this full-scale invasion, Putin is likely to do the same thing and move objects that in some way relate to Russian history, culture, or their imperial legacy back to the quote-unquote motherland.
Listen, guys, the bad news here is we've only got about a minute left in the show. What I want to ask, Eugene, is this a kind of genocide when you go after the history and the culture like this?
Well, this is both. This is also a cultural genocide. It's not only against humanity what Russians are doing now, but it also like really to destroy the culture, which is a ground of the nation, ground of the humanity, and that's a complete disaster. I just call people in the world to recognize it.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's intentional, and it's definitely not a new tactic. I mean, it makes me think of George Orwell, who said, you know, who controls the past controls the future, and who controls the present controls the past. And it seems like right now Putin's trying to control both Ukraine's past so he can control its future. That's it for today. I want to thank all my guests for joining us in this discussion, and we'll see you next time on the stream.